Good morning. Can everyone hear me? I often have a difficulty with my voice, I think. Well, I'm really glad to be here and to tell you about a special project that evolved as part of our ongoing partnership between academia and practice in the state of Illinois. We've been at this since about 2001, I believe, and I have with me Bobby Lyons here in the front row, and Nancy DeVilder, who both have worked on the project with us this past few years. Here are the learning objectives. The main thing that I really would love for you to get out of this is that third one, that you can think about how, where you live, you can put together a collaborative like the one that we have and adapt it to your own environment. I wanted to frame this talk this morning in the evidence-based practice process itself. And here you see how we practice within an evidence-based framework. Of course, it's a lifelong, self-directed learning that's done by converting our information needs or issues into answerable questions, and then having someone track down the evidence to answer the questions, critically appraising that evidence for validity and utility, applying the results and evaluating the performance. And this is one of my very favorite graphics in the world. This is the evidence-based practice schematic according to Bronson, and this is public health evidence-based practice. And I'm going to be talking to you about the first three steps here on this left side today for the remainder of the talk, and that's developing an initial statement of the issue. Bronson says to develop a statement. Those of you who do evidence-based practice teaching or work probably are familiar with Melnick, and she talks about looking at that issue in terms of a question, and we actually kind of combined those two as we went through this project. Quantifying the issue, then searching the literature, organizing the information, and we stopped there. We hope we can look at what went on after we stopped there. But the rest of the process is actually developing and prioritizing program options, putting them into an action plan that works with clients, and evaluating, and then retooling. And this is my second favorite schematic about evidence-based practice. And I draw this to the attention of students frequently because it goes back to our public health nurse roots, I think. It says that you can bring your professional skills, knowledge, and instinct to an issue, but you really have to consider client preferences. It's the old contracting in my mind. To arrive at what's the best evidence and then figure out the best practice and put it in to effect. So this process that we went through is a collaborative of the Illinois Public Health Association's nursing section in Illinois, and we put together an evidence-based committee in our nursing section. And that particular group consists of both public health nurses who are practicing, public health nursing leaders, and public health nursing educators. It was the only framework we could think of in our state where you could meld all those folks together well. And then our University of Illinois at Chicago College of Nursing, we've had funding since 2001 from HRSA to work with this framework of practice and education together. And so we've been slipping from that funded unit into IPHA nursing section so that this process could go on beyond our funding. And so we had our grant team members, and we also had graduate students that worked with this project. About 2.5 years ago, as a method to continue the AFNI project beyond funding, we hit on something called a Public Health Nurse Summit. And we do this once a year. We're going to be doing our fourth one this year. And it's a fairly large day-long meeting of nurses from all over the state in practice and education. And we kicked off our very first one where we had about 150 folks. We've gone up to about 170 the second time, I believe. But we kicked off with Bobby Berkowitz talking about evidence-based practice and policy. And at that first summit meeting, we worked in the afternoon in small groups. And we asked nurses in the room to identify practices, policies, and priorities related to evidence-based questions that they had. Things that they did in their practice that they didn't really know why they did them, or they thought needed to be improved. Things that perhaps we could find in the literature, well, perhaps we couldn't, but we needed to explore. So we worked in those small groups, took that information back, did a content analysis of it, and found that there were really five areas that people really wanted to look at. And those were chronic disease, especially as it related to adult obesity, immunizations, lead poisoning, prenatal outcomes. I don't know about your state, but we have a fairly large militant cadre of public health nursing practice leaders in our state who are not necessarily happy with the guidelines that the state has put out in terms of maternal child health visiting and the outcomes that are measured, and really wanted to know if there was evidence around those outcomes. And then sexually transmitted diseases. So we put out, after that first summit, we put out a call to action within the nursing section and asked people to sign up for one of those five task forces. People also signed up at the second PHN summit. This didn't kick off overnight. We formed five committees around each one of those issues. Then we developed a clinical question using the PICO format. How many of you know the PICO format? Okay, so you ask a question, you specify a population, you specify an intervention, a comparison group, often the standard intervention that you're doing now to compare the intervention against, and you look at outcomes. Then we had literature retrieval, and that was done by a student. We fed this project into our master's projects for our students. Every student at our place does a master's project before they graduate, and they often kind of get a little lost figuring out what to do. And we have we have 600 graduate students at our place, and we need a lot of master's projects. And this seemed like it was a win-win situation for people in practice, us and our students. So we staffed each one of these committees with a graduate student, and she went and retrieved the literature, reviewed it, brought it back to the committee, and the committee then talked about other sources that we knew of that could feed her lit review. A lot of folks who were on these task forces were real involved with the topic and had been to maybe a national meeting where there weren't really things published out of it yet, but they had access to paper and new information. And then we used this as a way to help all of us, practitioners and educators, learn the evidence-based practice process. So we kind of led each other through it the first time, and the folks on the committee talked back and forth with the student about the validity of the literature, and I'll give you an example of that. Then we formatted the final documents. We gave folks the opportunity to format either in the United States Preventative Services Task Force format or to do it in Cochrane format. And then we had a final review of the recommendations and the task forces voted whether to approve them or not. So here you see, I'm going to take you through an issue that came about in terms of STDs. And the initial statement of the issue was that we have persistent cervical infection with certain types of HPV. It's the single most important risk factor for cervical cancer, of course. But many preteens, teenagers, and young adults are risk to HPV infection, therefore cervical cancer. We have a vaccine to prevent that. But again, not many preteens and teenagers in our state are receiving that vaccine. So we knew that in our state we had an overall HPV prevalence of 23%. And I have to say, I went to China this summer to teach community health to faculty and graduate students, and they were appalled when I told them that we had a 23% HPV rate in our community. Here you see a breakdown by clinics. STD clinics, 27%, family planning clinics, 26%, primary care clinics, 15%, and then you see a prevalence by age that's highest in the teenage years. Whoops. Well, we were unable to quantify the use of the vaccine, but the local health departments reported very little use of the limited vaccine that they had available. And so here's the question that group came up with, the PICO question. What educational social marketing strategies are successful in increasing the rate of immunization with HPV vaccine in girls completing the sixth grade physical requirement? And the student went and looked at data sources, gathered articles for us, and told us what the strength of the evidence was. And she presented it in a table like this. And you've seen these in lit reviews. And then the committee rated the evidence. And you should have with your handout, I know you can't read this, but you should have with your handouts one of these that you actually can read, and presents our recommendations. And our recommendations are based in terms of ratings with rationale for those ratings. And for this particular question, we use the USPSTF, and they provide a rating scale that says you strongly recommend for this action, you recommend for it, you make no recommendation, it's not recommended, or there's insufficient evidence to make the recommendation. And if you look on there, you'll see the recommendations that we had for the Gardasil. Now, I also wanted to share with you the other questions that we came up with in our other groups. And here's the lead prevention question. In children birth to 7, because that's when the most damage from lead occurs, do population-focused strategies reduce blood lead levels and sequelae? What are the strategies for primary prevention? A treatment lead, this group wanted to do two questions, so we brought in two students. Do population-focused treatment strategies influence the incidence of developmental delays in children aged 0 to 7 who have lead poisoning? Then we had an obesity question. I'll let you read that. And an STD question. A prenatal question, which Nancy did with her group, in 12 to 19-year-olds, which population-focused nursing interventions result in reduced subsequent pregnancies? And our dissemination of this. We have a website which is listed here. The Illinois Public Health Association's website disseminates the results and recommendations from all these task forces. It's also at the Illinois Department of Public Health intranet, and it's at our AFNI website at U of I. We're working on an article to publish our first round, and we're in our second round now, looking at 5 more issues and questions. We've run into a little H1N1 in the state, so we're going a little bit slower this time than we did last, but actually we're ticking along with 2 or 3 of the task forces. Any questions? Yes.
These are all really highly evaluation questions.
Yes.
Are you looking at disseminating
beyond
public health nursing?
You know, we really haven't. And so talk more about that.
Mm-hmm. To document the effectiveness, particularly from a graduate student perspective. When I taught the MSN students in this finally learned in one semester you're not going to complete
the project. Oh, yeah.
Just give me the description of your project, and it's not going to be perfect, so really critique a lot. That shows me you understand your process. A lot of this is social marketing. Did that inform your work too? I'm impressed with the challenge you've addressed, and bringing the students to awareness of some of the issues are really important. Are you doing some what's called process evaluation, looking at output and maybe more qualitative data, as well as the hard quantitative that usually you need for funding?
One of the things that we'd like to do, and we don't have funding, and actually we're going to try to talk with, we've had three National Library of Medicine grants that kind of led us to get people up to speed on evidence-based practice. So we've done that around the state and with students, and we have a module out there on the web that's got continuing education units. And that kind of formed the very basis before we jumped into this. We know that what we'd really like to do is evaluate now what people actually do with the information. And that's going to take actually getting some money to be able to do that. And you're right, if we could do it in our evaluation course in a semester, that would be so wonderful, but we probably can't. And this takes, these are master's projects, so they're not just semesters. You know, this whole process usually takes somewhere around 2 semesters to do, and yeah, at least. But actually we did it in 2 semesters with our first round. Once we get up and going, Bobby, who's our project coordinator, it just kind of keeps us pushed and going along the road. So yes.
I'm wondering if you can elaborate a little bit more on who actually follows through and implements the recommendations. For example, with HPV, your recommendation that strategies to increase healthcare providers' acceptance of and endorsement of the HPV vaccine are likely to increase the rate of immunization. Well, does somebody develop a plan to educate MDs?
These sit out there on the websites, and our public health nurses who are leaders in our health departments have been part of our group since about 2001. And so folks have access to this. And what we haven't done, I told you it's just the first 3 steps, they then can take this information. It's like going to the Cochrane website, you know, and you've got the information for what could be done that's been synthesized for you, but then you have to carry it forward. So the idea is that in my health department, since I participated in one of these task forces, in my health department, I will now know that what I need to do is go to my primary health care providers and get the word out to them, because they're one of the best ways, people listen to them, to deal with getting this vaccine out there. So we need to, and it's a social marketing thing, as this woman said over here. So, and we have seen with many things in our state that nurses taking that out to the private practices, whether it's disaster preparedness, whether it's knowing how to report the Class A agents and get the health department's attention right away, that people have done work with their health departments in that way. And this is, or health departments have done work with their primary care providers. So that recommendation in particular was one of, you need to get out to your primary care providers. But we don't know. I mean, we don't know at this point if it's been done or how it's been done. But that's something we'd really like to get funding to see how that worked out. Oh, okay, that would be great.
I have a question about your coalition.
What we did when we formed the original coalition, we put together a policy group that's statewide. And on that state policy group, there is a regional rep, and then we have big regional groups. And we have 5 of those, and that's because U of I has 5 regional campuses for nursing around the state. And so that was our structure. But for this, we did it on the phone, so you could be anywhere. We had people from all over the state in each task force. It wasn't a regional piece.
So did you have students participate in the literature
review
of all different campuses as well?
Yes. Yeah.
Our students, as part of their work, have to have